You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Coming up now, we have an interview with one of my favourite experts in Tamaki Makaurau, Ian McLean, the Auckland representative for Birds New Zealand. Ian indulges me on a question plaguing my mind. How do birds stay cool in the summer as it becomes increasingly hotter each year, otherwise known as climate change? And as it happens to be, birds have been quite a hot topic this summer, with the devastating bird flu reaching us to see birds washing up on the west coast. We discuss these bird matters and how you can help out a bird in the summer. Spoiler alert, it does not include feeding them sugar water. Basically, it's now summer and the general incline of temperatures has been a known happening for quite some time. And it brings me to my first and very rudimentary question. How do birds cope with heat, and is there a point at which they stop coping?
Okay, so they cope with heat in various ways. They can, if it's really hot, they can kind of pant a bit like a dog would. Basically open their mouth and breathe heavily and then release that heat that way. But the biggest issue with heat for birds is actually a lack of food. So particularly with seabirds, because actually cold water is far more productive than warm water. And that's why the further south you go and the further north you go, the more seabirds there are. But in the middle of the equator, there's actually not many. So people often think of really warm temperatures at the beach being fantastic, but it's actually not very good for birds.
Have there been any documented changes regarding bird behaviours in response to warming temperatures?
Well, there's a lot of data coming in as far as birds dying off because there's a lack of food. So, and then there's also changes to migration, but the lack of food one at the moment is an issue. For example, on the west coast of the North Island, there's lots of sooty shearwater, which are known as titi, and they're actually dying on West Auckland beaches at the moment. There's been up to 80 being found on Murawai Beach, and this weekend our Birds New Zealand crew is going to Karikari Beach to do a survey. And from what we've been told, we'll have a lot of dead birds to collect. And these are all birds that have actually died of starvation
and just been found
on the beaches.
Wow.
Yeah. But it's a regular thing that does occur every couple of years, especially when there's warm sea temperatures.
You mentioned how data's been showing an increase of birds dying. When did this trend sort of pick up?
It's kind of always been a trend. So we have what we call wrecks, and this might be a natural thing which occurs every 10 years or every 5 years. And sometimes these are caused by weather events like extreme westerly winds. But at the moment, there's probably not enough data to say for sure, but it seems like these starvation events are happening more often. And we're also probably finding that a lot of the seabirds are moving further south because they want that cold water. So eventually we might have a lot less penguins in Auckland and Northland, and we might find that birds like diving petrels and sooty shearwaters move south.
Mm. Is that something that you've started noticing already, less penguins in Auckland, more in the south?
I think we can't say for sure that there's a change in numbers, but certainly in Auckland and in places like Parkery Beach, sometimes we do a beach patrol and we find a lot of dead penguins. And they're quite difficult birds to study as far as the numbers, because the penguins and little penguins don't nest in big colonies. They just nest individually. And they also nest underground in caves and in small burrows. Whereas penguins through the south and sub-Antarctic, they tend to nest on rocks in the open, and you could count them easier. But even then, a lot of those penguins to the south of New Zealand, like Campbell Island, Auckland Island, a lot of those ones have had a lot more data on them for the last 40 or 50 years, perhaps even since the Second World War, and a lot of those numbers have really hugely decreased. And it's because the penguins have to actually swim further to catch their prey. On, say, Antipodes Islands, Campbell Islands, there's a lot of less penguins than there used to be.
I'm almost speechless.
It's something that usually happens quite gradually. But global warming has caused other changes, and some of them can be positive. So you get more tropical species coming into New Zealand, for example. But there are some around the world, some quite amazing changes. So in New Zealand, we of course have the white heron, which is the kotuku, which is on our $2 coin. And it started breeding in the United Kingdom. So it's actually found in New Zealand, but it's also found in England as well. And it started breeding there in 2012, probably because it got warmer there. And it's now able to survive, you know, because the winters are not as cold as they used to be. There can be changes like that, which can be positive, but they can also be really negative to other species as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really interesting that some birds are actually benefiting from warmer temperatures. And speaking of, New Zealand's really been feeling the heat, and I'm always thinking about the birds as us humans sit inside our air-conditioned offices and just wondering, like, how do they cope? But I suppose you're saying the real danger is the water in which they get their food from is not able
That's
to cope.
Right. Yeah, and certain species will suffer. Like, for example, occasionally we find, say, emperor penguins or Adélie penguins or king penguins that come to New Zealand as vagrants, and they really struggle because they've actually got a layer of blubber under their feathers, under their skin, and that's to keep them warm in the Antarctic. But if they come to New Zealand, they actually struggle because it's far too hot. But most birds, they can actually cope with it. They can obviously pant to lose heat. And if there's plenty of water available, fresh water or salt water, they can actually bathe in it to cool down, which is a good thing. The issue that we have globally is if there's more deserts around the world, there's more places where birds are going to struggle, especially if they have to fly over a desert because there might not be anywhere to get water.
Yeah, no pit stops.
That's right, yeah. Or less food for them because obviously, there's more insect life and more invertebrates in places where there's, you know, a lot of forest and grasslands. But if it's just bare sand, there's actually a lot less food for them.
I'm kind of seeing it like their gas stations have been taken away from them in a way.
That's very important for migratory birds. You know, for example, godwits, kuaka, when they leave New Zealand to go back to Alaska, they have to actually stop off in the Yellow Sea, which is bordered by North and South Korea and China. And, of course, a lot of the land there has all been reclaimed. It's been turned into industrial land or farmland. And they don't have any sort of place where they can have a pit stop on their way north.
Oh, it's just so sad. Are you able to speak quickly on the bird flu in New Zealand currently impacting chicken farms and if it's something that we will see spread to general wildlife in Aotearoa?
It could be something. It's something we have to certainly be wary of. The version of the flu which is here at the moment is not the most severe. But bird flu is kind of, it's unusual in some ways in that it affects some species more than others. So birds that nest in sort of tightly packed colonies, say birds like gannets or gulls or terns, some species of shags, they're more vulnerable because they're sitting right next to their neighbour. And they're often arguing with that neighbour as well. In gannet colonies in particular around the world, especially in the Northern Hemisphere, have really suffered. So it could affect those birds more. But there are other situations where bird flu can be transmitted. And these are quite important ones that people might not be aware of. And one of them is actually unnatural feeding concentrations. So, for example, a lot of people think it's a really good idea to have bird feeders in their garden, and in some ways it is, but in some ways it's not, because you have one feeding receptacle, like for sugar water, and that doesn't compare to a kowhai tree where there's 10,000 flowers.
Mm.
So then all the birds use the one receptacle. And it causes all sorts of aggression. It causes all sorts of problems with parasites and disease transmission. And if you can imagine 50 people eating off one plate for a whole week that wasn't washed, it's a real vector for all sorts of illness.
Yeah, it's quite nasty when you really think about it, and I've never thought about aggression either.
Yeah, I mean, a lot people sometimes don't get it. They think they're doing the birds a favour. It's actually better to plant trees.
Okay.
Plant trees, restore the environment, trap predators. There's no real need to just feed birds huge amounts of food.
Yeah, that does bring me to my next question. And as you mentioned, sugar water feeders are a breeding zone for disease transmission. So yep. How can we look out for birds in the incoming heat without accidentally causing more damage?
I think with bird feeders, it's important to clean them up. I mean, just clean them regularly. But as I said, plant more trees rather than having feeders. But there's also a lot of signs about bird flu which we should look for and really be aware of picking birds up that might look unwell, because it can be transmitted to people.
What does an unwell bird look like?
Okay, there's several different symptoms. So the first one, it's got really low energy. And it might just be sitting on the ground, not flying, sort of being quite unnatural. And also have really bad diarrhea. It could have purple discoloration and swelling to the bare parts of its body. So its legs might be all swollen up and purple in colour. If it's a chicken, it's the comb on the top of its head, which is the kind of a crest, that might be kind of purple in colour. Birds can be sort of lacking in coordination, uncoordinated when they walk. They can have nasal discharge, coughing and sneezing.
Mm-hmm.
But also birds that have died of bird flu often have neurological signs. So their body goes into a paralysis. Their body can be all twisted up. Their neck can be twisted back.
These poor birds.
Yeah, it's almost like what you call spastication. So they lose control of their muscles.
Oh, my
God. And it can leave them in very unusual body postures. But one of the complicating things is that in New Zealand we use lots of poisons. There's commercially available poisons which you can buy out of a hardware store to kill birds, which is quite bizarre. You can do that.
Mm.
And people do it in their backyards. They do it at their businesses. The birds are supposed to be put unconscious for a moment, and then you can dispatch them, and people do it.
Wow.
And they seem to have no hesitation about doing it. You know, if you don't want feral pigeons around your house or your business, don't feed them. There's a simple solution.
Well, send them my way. I'll look after them.
Yeah. There's a simple solution to it, but people do use poisons, and they can have similar kind of symptoms to bird flu. Yeah.
I just have one more question for you.
Sure.
The hoiho, yellow-eyed penguin, took out the title for Bird of the Year in Aotearoa. And as the Auckland Regional Representative for Birds New Zealand, what are your thoughts on this? And do you have a favourite bird?
I'm quite happy with that decision. I think the Bird of the Year is often a competition with issues. Birds New Zealand doesn't run it. It's actually run by Forest and Bird, and they can operate it however they want to. But there can be flaws in that competition.
Oh, interesting.
Because sometimes birds like the pukeko have won it, and really we don't need any more of them. The bird of the century was the pukekikeki, which is the great crested grebe. And whilst it's a fantastic bird, it's only found in the South Island in New Zealand, but it's found around most of the world. It's found in Australia, it's found in Asia, it's found in Africa, and it's found in Europe. And ideally it would have been great if a New Zealand endemic bird had won that particular competition.
Mm.
But it was actually won kind of in an odd way, because it appeared on media and a television program in the United States, that people voted for it all around the world, who weren't New Zealanders, who didn't know that it was not just found in New Zealand, it was found all around most of the world.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, then we've had bats winning it as well.
The drama of it all.
Yeah, there's a bit of it's an unusual competition, I think, and there's often the same birds have won it several times. It would always be good to have a new bird, which is one which is actually really in need of help, or one which is comparatively unknown.
Who's your bird of the year?
Okay, my bird of the year, my personal favourite, is the Pareira grey duck, which is a fantastic native duck species, which is in New Zealand is threatened by the invasive mallard duck, which we've introduced and which people feed. It's a beautiful duck, and it's in danger because of hybridization. That is, it's being jumped on by male mallards, and there's a mixing of the genes. We're losing the species in New Zealand because of the mallard duck, and it also requires really good wetland habitat. And, of course, we've drained all our wetlands, and we've actually, the ones that we create are more suited to mallard ducks and Canada geese than they are New Zealand endemic and native waterfowl. So that's one of my favourites. There's a couple of others I really love. I like the kieke, which is a saddleback, and I like the mohua, which is the yellowhead. I think they're all fantastic birds.
They are lovely. Thank you so much for indulging us with your knowledge on birds, specifically New Zealand native birds.
Hey, thanks very much, and I appreciate your interest, and hopefully people keep their interest going in our bird life. Certainly it's fascinating to be a bird watcher, and hopefully we might encourage some people.
Yeah, I think so, and I hope so. Yeah.